everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and imitations of other people that help you live a more positively minded life. Hey, Michael, do you imitate Armand? Michael mimics people. Do you ever think of that, Michael? Let me hear it. You can even do my introduction. Go ahead.
I have many introductions, many people's introductions. I don't quite have yours.
You got to get mine down, Pat.
Okay, all right.
I got my music there. Okay. I'm going to do Michael, too. Hi, this is Michael G. Haskins. You're a hard one to do because you're a hard man to follow, Michael. Hmm. So much news, my friends. So much news. So much stuff in the news that has meaning and impact to all of us. You know, I can't let this one pass. It would be an almost obvious faux pas for here at WBAI for not to make mention of the New Jersey lawmakers passing the medical marijuana bill. Now, I am sure you have heard about this by now because it's in the press. But the New Jersey legislature approved a measure on Monday that would make this the 14th state to legalize the use of marijuana to help patients with chronic illnesses. Why is that important? Because marijuana went along with Vietnam, protesting, WBAI, the 60s, normal. I'm not advocating the use of marijuana. In fact, I wish people wouldn't use it, because I think there's a different state of mind that's even more valuable. But it's an important thing. If we illegalized or if we did some control over alcohol that was different, it would be so nice to control some of what happens with alcoholism. Well, here we are. This measure, this lawmaking measure, which allows patients diagnosed with severe illnesses like cancer, AIDS, Lou Gehrig disease, muscular dystrophy, and multiple sclerosis to have access to marijuana grown and distributed through state-monitored dispensaries, thank you very much, was passed, okay? So the idea here is, of course, this was done in California. And in California, it became, just as soon as they announced it, a group of people stood up and said, hey, you have to include us in the people who are allowed to use it, because in California, you're more likely to find a group of people who will stand up and say, you must include us. And a lot of them represented a kidney patient, a heart patient. They represented other things and other illnesses. The original idea of it was that it helps settle the stomach. It helps settle nausea. And it's a very potent tool for settling nausea. You know, if a person's got an upset stomach, THC or tetrahydrocannabinol was very good at getting you to settle your stomach. So people who have cancer, who don't eat, with a little marijuana, they would find themselves being more nutritional. People with AIDS can actually eat more food when they are with marijuana. They found marijuana was helpful. So this is not just about drugs. It's about the whole medical system. However, of all places to start, in California, the idea was they formed these marijuana clubs where the patients would go to grow the cannabis. With the intent of dispensing it to other members for the sole purpose of medical use. Well, of course, they heard that. And doctors set themselves up to write prescriptions for marijuana. Television station KCBS did an undercover report at a Los Angeles clinic, and they found the waiting room full of young people laughing about what they would invent to receive their note for medical marijuana. And after a brief visit with the doctor, three of the four healthy people sent by the TV station obtained their notes. They were the complaints were hair loss, dry skin, or high heel pain. And the doctor, of course, was saying, sure. But you see, according to the law, it says specifically, marijuana can be prescribed to aid in anything where marijuana shows relief to a chronic pain, a chronic disorder. A lot of people object to this. They say, you know, what are you doing? Why are you legalizing it? Why are you controlling it? In fact, in California, it didn't act very much as a control because the people wound up not buying so much of the grown marijuana as they did the street marijuana and distributing that instead because it was easier and more potent. But things are changing, you know, things are changing. And we're getting the feeling that things are changing. And then they're prescribing drugs like Prozac pretty loosely, you know, where any physician in the world, he doesn't even have to be a psychiatrist, can write a prescription for Prozac. You know, why not marijuana? What's the difference? Well, here's the difference. January 6, 2010, New York Times. Widely prescribed drugs for depression provide relief in extreme cases, but are no more effective than placebo pills for most patients who take the drug. And the findings help settle a long-standing debate about antidepressants. So they find that the antidepressants that people take, these serotonin reuptake inhibitors and other things like that, don't seem to do much more than a placebo in helping people with other than severe depression. And in the cases of severe depression, it's a toss-up. Maybe it helps, maybe it doesn't help. But in the case of people with moderate depression, it doesn't seem to help at all, except for its placebo effect, which lets you think that it helps you. What it does do is it has two side effects. One side effect that the antidepressants have had in general is that they lower your sexual drive. That's an important thing, because for many people, to lower their sexual drive drops their energy, drops their anxiety, makes them less crazed. So maybe that's not such a bad thing. For people who don't want to lower their sexual drive, it's not such a good thing. The other thing about it is that it inhibits bonding. There is something about the antidepressants that make people feel more separate from their partners, and it inhibits the bonding chemicals. So one of the things that we've found is that people who are not only are sexually attracted, but they're also not bonded to their mates. So there are a lot of marriages out there where people, Prozacians and others like that, are walking around somewhat in a zombie state of a pleasant mind. And yet these are the drugs that we prescribe. And I have seen many people who will go through that. Now, I'm not saying you should not take antidepressants, but I am saying if you're going to take them, be with a real responsible psychiatrist who studies the mind, who's not just a dispensary, you know, who's not just a dispenser of pills. Be with somebody who understands and looks for and sees if there's a real effect or not a real effect. Because we're learning all this stuff we do just has its consequences and is meaningless. I consulted with somebody earlier today who talked to me about a number of her relationships, one relationship after another, and how she tries so hard to meet people who are decent. She said to me, "What do you think?" And I said, "It seems like you're trying to meet somebody, but that somebody's on the inside of your chest, and they're banging on your chest trying to meet you, because you're not going to meet this person through the outside. It looks like you're looking for yourself somehow. It looks like you believe that by feeling connected to another human, you're going to connect to the better part of yourself. You're looking for a lost part of yourself, the part of yourself that feels loving and loved. And you thought you'd find it through relationship." I said, "But going through relationship after relationship as you do, it's like digging a hole and filling it up, and digging a hole and filling it up. People who go through endless relationship conflicts where they never stop, it's all about relationships. They're just digging holes and filling them up because there's something we're looking for. We're looking to feel good. We're looking to feel okay. We're looking to feel imbalance. In balance, as opposed to imbalanced." Just a second more about the antidepressants, just to let you know. Richard Friedman, when the American Medical, I love it. The American Medical Association published its study questioning the effectiveness of the antidepressant drugs. This kind of meta-analysis, according to Richard Friedman, was kind of questionable. However, he did say that, you know, most people who are taking the drugs and find that they are not effective, if they get off the drugs, they get more severely depressed because they're having a reaction to getting off the drug, not a reaction to the drug having cured them. So the idea, especially Paxil is one of those, where if you take the drug and it doesn't work, when you stop taking it, you get worse because something happened with the drug itself. Why don't they let us alone? You know, why don't they just let us go about our merry way? Trying to understand what people are and how people are and how they function is a very, very difficult thing. After all of my years and all of my experience of meeting people, doing my own therapy with myself, discovering myself, learning from other people, studying with so many people, I find it kind of amazing that anybody could understand anybody. There are so many forces at work. You know, I mean, chemistry is at work all the time, we're learning. Your mood, your chemicals. Your emotions, your chemicals. But then there's chemicals. I was looking at a website today. Yeah, I wonder if I could pull that up and play that on the air. It's really amazing. Because it was a website for an organization that I don't agree with. But they talked about this deep emotional connection that you have to your past, to what happens to you in your history. It says that, you know, once when you were a child, you had certain emotional experiences that just get repeated over and over again as you get an adult. They gave an example of it. Imagine if you ate a food like chicken and you got nauseous from it because it was poisoned. Not poisoned, but old or something tainted, and you got sick from it. They said later in life, you could fully understand that when somebody offers you chicken, you could turn away from it and say, oh, no, I don't want to have it. I don't like chicken. You see, the impression went deep in your brain. Well, these impressions that go deep in your brain also happen with emotional experiences, where somebody punishes you, somebody hurts you, somebody does something to you. All of this forms your personality. In trying to understand personality, as I've done all of my life, I have mostly taken from the work of Gestalt therapy, of all of them, yeah. Because I study the others. I mean, I look at the others. I look at chemical basis, and I look at Freudian analysis, and I looked at Jungian, and I looked at all the others. But the Gestalt therapy was the thing that was the most interesting to me. And what I like about Gestalt therapy, not that I practice it or do any of the people I work with practice it. They do it as a part of an incorporation of the work they do. But it explains things beautifully. So I thought for the next couple of days, I present you some of these wonderful ideas that you can use from Gestalt therapy that you could use to work with yourself. Ways that you can improve yourself. Ways that you can better yourself. Ways that you could identify and connect with yourself. And we'll take your calls too. So just to start this off, we're talking about Gestalt, G-E-S-T-A-L-T, which in German I think means the whole, the total. Basically a belief, you know, formulated by a Freudian psychoanalyst who was Fritz Perls and his wife Laura Perls, who I knew personally here in New York. It proposed the first theory of holistic self, holism, with a theoretical orientation to counseling, which believes human beings have a natural capacity for growth and change, and that they're responsible for their own existence and life choices. The primary goal of Gestalt therapy is to increase the individual's self-awareness so that they can integrate the self into the totality, the whole. Gestalt therapy's primary focus is to bring the client to the here and now of the present. Now, this you've seen in every meditation that you've ever done. It's kind of evolved over time. Be here now was the biggest Gestalt quote. Be here now. You know, all worries, they come from the future. All regrets, they come from the past. Almost all of your angst comes from either the future or the past. Can you be here now? The Gestalt theory of personality is kind of what they call an existential philosophy. Now, that's a word you've heard. Existential philosophy is kind of, was I think it was started by Rollo May or a couple some other people back there. It was basically a belief that you are not just this little you in the skin-encapsulated ego that we call yourself, but you are everything, that you're a part of everything, that you can only be seen as part of your whole, part of the whole, the existential belief. It has an emphasis on living life in the present moment, increasing your self-awareness, and the integration of all aspects of yourself into the whole. Now, I'll give you a good example of this. Dream analysis according to Gestalt therapy. If you're a Gestalt therapist or you're a Gestaltist, and you look at dream theory, here's what they see as a dream, okay? I had a dream. I had a dream that I was driving down a road, and I was in a red truck, and in the back of the truck was a dog. And the dog was barking at a baby who was left on the road. This is a dream a patient of mine had. And the baby was waving to the dog. But the truck kept going away further and further, and the dog kept barking louder and louder. The Gestalt therapist would look at that dream, and how would you look at that dream? You'd say one thing or another. You know, what you're really doing is saying you're leaving your baby behind, you're leaving yourself behind, and so on and so forth. The Gestalt therapist would take you in every piece of the dream and have you be every part of it. Of course, he would have you be the child. And he would have you say, be that child who's looking at the truck. What was that child experiencing? And you would talk about the child in you that often feels like the truck is going away and you're waving at it. But are you waving in pain? In the dream, the child wasn't waving in pain. It was saying goodbye. So the interpretation could be that the child is waving goodbye to a part of itself. Because in the truck, there's a dog. And what's the dog doing? He's barking louder and louder as you get away. And that part of me is the dog. And you say, so what part of you is the dog? The part of me that doesn't want to leave these things behind. And then he would go on to see who was driving the truck. And then Fritz would actually say, imagine that you are the truck itself. Give the truck a voice. And the truck would say, I am carrying these people to a place that they need to go. And you find the part of you that carries you. So in a Gestalt theory of a dream, you take every piece of the dream, every fact that you could remember, even the color, and you become it. And that's the way you find the integrated meaning of the dream. It's really fascinating stuff. Let's talk about Gestalt therapy and homeostasis. From the standpoint of Gestalt therapy, all human behavior is regulated by a process of balance. And he said that human beings are always naturally striving for this homeostasis in order to maintain health. The natural tendency towards balance in the human being largely controls their perceptions, and most important, their perception of needs. Now, what does this mean? It means, put in simple terms, when an individual is not in a state of equilibrium, they become hungry, thirsty, or they desire sexual intercourse. Let's think about that. If you're in not an equilibrium, you look to change your balance by eating, by drinking, by having sex. When the individual meets that need, they achieve a momentary state of equilibrium, only to find a new one emerging which needs addressing. The needs of the individual could be either physical, emotional, social, or intellectual. So according to the basis of this Gestalt therapy, it's saying you're always looking to find a balance in yourself one way or another, and almost all of your behaviors could be interpreted as finding a way so that you could find your balanced self. Think about yelling at your wife, saying, you're not giving me the right stuff, or yelling at your husband and blaming him for something. What are you trying to do? You're trying to find a balance inside yourself by getting the other person to give it to you. You're looking for your own balance. If you're in balance, you're almost never yelling at people over anything. According to this thing, Gestalt therapy also proposes that in order for human beings to interact with their environment, They must develop the capacity for aggression. Now, this is very important. Aggression means that an individual dissembles elements of their own environment and comes to assimilate them, allowing for his own growth. Many people I know can get angry, but they cannot be aggressive. They can get angry, they can blurt out, but they cannot be aggressive. Aggressiveness. What is aggressiveness? If you're an animal and you're in the jungle, you have a natural aggressiveness. You have the aggressiveness that helps you hunt, helps you defend yourself, helps you find a new place, helps you find a mate. It's natural. If you're a child grown up in a world where you have a mother who says to you, you should never be angry, you should never show any kind of aggression, then what would happen to you as an animal in the world? Well, you'd be in the world without any defenses. If you believed it, if you were going to be nice for mommy, right? Mommy doesn't like it when you get angry. Mommy doesn't like it when you scream like that. So now you become nice for mommy. Now what happens to you? You're now an animal in the jungle without any weapons. You don't believe you have any weapons. So what's the answer to that? You live in a cave. You have to live where you're safe. You live underground. You live where people can't see you. So many people I know have had angerectomies or aggressionectomies. They've had the aggression removed from them, and they can't aggress. They can't make decisions. They can't move forward. Part of what Gestalt therapy does is it identifies this need, and it helps a person identify their need for aggression. Now, I'm not selling Gestalt therapy. I'm telling you, this is what I was trained in. I have no place to sell it because nobody does it that I know. I mean, people do it, but they integrate it. What I'm trying to tell you about is a way of approaching understanding people. Aggression is an essential part of people. If you are depressed, you are lacking aggression. You find an amazing thing. It's the other side of depression is always aggression. A person cannot aggress, they're usually depressed. Lastly, for now, let me present this. Gestalt theorizes that when an individual falls out of this balance that we're looking for, they enter a state of maladjustment. According to the Gestalt theory, there are several ways a person can block themselves and develop a neurosis. And what they call a neurosis is a constant state of trying to find your balance by acting out one thing or another. Either you become very private, or you become very angry, or you become very mean, or you become depressed. It's all an attempt to find balance. How would you say being mean helps you find balance? Well, maybe if everybody will do what you say, you'll find a balance inside yourself. You're trying to find an inner peace, but you're trying to find it in a neurotic way, by controlling, by commanding, by so on and so forth. According to Gestalt theory, this is the beginning of neurosis. The beginning of neurosis is all being out of balance and trying to find balance. How many of you feel out of balance and can identify the way you are trying to find your balance? Think about it. How many of you feel like you're out of balance and you decide, I'm going to go to school. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to get a new boyfriend. I'm going to do this. You have all these solutions, which are your attempt to find your balance by doing something on the outside that makes you feel your balance. And in fact, point of fact, the whole growth of the exercise industry is an attempt for you to feel physical balance, because we found that we could replace emotional imbalance sometimes with a feeling of physical balance. You know, you feel strong. I feel good. I exercised. I feel okay. Balance for the moment, but it doesn't always last. But maladjustment is something that happens as a result of trying to find a balance in an ineffective way. And these things that they do, the things that you do, which we're going to talk about over the next couple of days, are called introjection, projection, retroflexion, deflection, and confluence. Let me talk about deflection for a moment. You're in a room and you're trying to talk about yourself in some way. And you start off by saying generalizations. You know, all people feel this way when this happens. As opposed to saying, I feel this way when this happens. That's deflection. The idea of deflection is to deflect the feeling so that you don't talk about it, so that it identifies you. You avoid the I, and you talk about general terms like all people, like most people, like you generalize. You deflect. You deflect anything from touching you so that you don't feel the feeling yourself. And we're going to take your calls, by the way, at 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. Now, there's a thing called justification. Somebody who attempts to justify what they have done is eventually saying, yes, I did that, but let me tell you why. It's not my fault. That's a form of deflection. Let me tell you why I did it. Right? They're justifying it. And it's potentially defensive. Participation in the action is being admitted, but the responsibility for the action is being denied. Let me tell you why I did it. Yes, I did it, but let me tell you why. The net effect is the same as denial. I didn't do it. The other one, it says, I may have done this awful thing, but you did this. See? So yeah, I did that, but you did this. It's the same thing. This is a slightly more complex form of deflecting, in which you throw back the responsibility to another person. People do that a lot in arguments too. Why? What's so dangerous about talking about yourself? Well, the trouble with talking about yourself is when you talk about yourself in a vulnerable way without talking about anybody else or holding anybody else responsible, is it makes you feel more. You feel more, you say I, and you feel more, and you talk more about your feelings, and it makes you feel a little sadder. You know, we should distinguish between two kinds of defensive reactions while we're on the subject. Though outward forms are going to look very similar, there's a difference between someone who is accused of something he or she has not done, and someone who has done a bad thing but who doesn't want to acknowledge it. Actually, we should distinguish between three kinds of defensive reactions. There are people who haven't done a thing they're accused of, people who have done the thing and know it and don't want to talk about it, and people who have done the thing and who have managed to twist things in their mind so that they honestly don't know it, but instead think the problem was caused by someone else. Many, many people do not see the creation of their own lives. It's a you did it, and they believe it. They feel it. It's the third kind. The last form is known as denial. So these topics of defensiveness is a fascinating one, which we're going to be able to talk about more as the days come up, because I want to present to you some of the beauty of this idea, of this stuff. And soon we're going to talk about introjection and projection as well. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM, with you Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays this week. But I do want to take callers. So get on the phones, my friends, 212-209-2900. You can relate to any or all of what I've related to you so far. We're going to continue with this on through tomorrow, so we've got time. And the reason I want to take your calls is very soon we'll be coming up to our fund drive. Yes, in the end of January, we're going to be putting on a fund drive, and we have special programming asking you. But during that entire month, there are no callers that come into the station. So here's your chance to join us and be a part of us and really enjoy your being here with us. This is Armand DeMille. It's been a very successful year so far in what I've heard about some of the intentions of some of the most important people. I feel confident that we're all in this together and working together. I'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
New York.
Live if you wanna live, Rasta man, vibration, yeah,
positive.
That's what we got to give. I and I, vibration, yeah,
positive.
Got to have a good vibe.
I am man. massive way, if you know what I mean. Make way for the positive day, 'cause it's news, news and days, new time. And if it's a new a new day,
picking up, are you picking up now?
Jah love, Jah love,
protect us.
Jah love, Jah love,
protect us.
Jah love, Jah love.
That's Bob Marley, Positive Vibrations, coincidental. Positive Vibrations, we're trying very hard, you know. We all try very hard to make it work in our lives. That gets so frustrating. You look at your plans, you look at what you're doing, you look at your scheme, you look at how you're trying, you look at everything you're doing, you try love. Deep, deep love. What a beautiful thing love is. What is it, just the chemicals? You know, is love all about this bonding and this oxytocin and all this nice stuff and the hormones? And is that what love is? Is love something else? Is connection really important? Who knows? I'm threatened by my own belief. I've challenged by my own beliefs. I'm not sure about any of it. What I do know is that if you're going to look anywhere to find peace, you have to look inside yourself. Meditation alone is not the answer. I know a lot of people who find it through meditation, but they leave the planet. They just leave in order to find themselves. It doesn't help them one bit. The rest of the time, they just find a new escape zone, you know? So you now escape from having conflicts. You escape through meditation. It's just another escape. Being able to face yourself, now that's really something. Being able to identify who you are, that's really something. That's the tough stuff. It's been my battle my whole life. You know, and I got a lot of room to grow, as we all do, I think. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. 212-209-2900. Michael, anybody up there yet?
Yeah, there's a couple people up.
Good. Let's say hello. Hi there, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Armand.
Yes.
Armand. Can you hear me?
Yes, I could hear you.
Hi. How are you doing today?
What's your name?
My name is Anthony.
Hello, Anthony.
Hi. I'm in a relationship right now with a woman, and she's like turned on me over the last 6 months or so. Just accusations and blame and just framing me out to be something I'm not. All the time. Let me just give you a quick history. She was, for like 10 years or so, she was a drug addict. She was on cocaine, alcoholic and whatnot. She's been 2 years sober now. And she works a program with AA and things like that. And, you know, she is just, and I've drank, I never was a drinker or got into any kind of drugs, but I've been with her for almost a year. and she is just like back to an old way. Like she's just angry, resentful, you know, always questioning me, always being real, real hard and critical about my life. Like she's projecting her own self onto me all the time, you know, and she doesn't want to see it. She thinks I am the one that's spinning it around and deflecting and denying. You know, I can't, if I lock down a point with her about how she's acting, you know, it just comes back to me. It always spins back to me no matter what I do.
You said now you're seeing what deflection's all about, Anthony. But yeah. Anthony, okay, let me interrupt you for a moment. Let me ask you two things, okay?
Right.
Number one, let me help you a little bit with your reaction to her, because it seems that logic, which would be the weapon against hysteria, when right. somebody is coming with you in an illogical argument, logic seems to be the argument. It doesn't work. You know, logic is like a funny hook on a speeding yeah. car. It just doesn't work. It's like those things that the police throw under cars to try to give them flat tires, you know, a yeah. speeding on either. And then the car goes out of whack completely, and now it's spinning around.
Right.
It doesn't work. Logic doesn't work. Love may not work. Because you, Anthony, can spill your heart, and I can see you're very close to your heart, and I can see you've shed more than one tear about this, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It hurts, doesn't it?
It kills me, and I knew her in fifth grade.
Well, let's wait. It didn't kill you. It hurt you.
Yeah.
Hurt you. You look at this, and you say, but I love this girl. But I love this person. And we've been through so much. And all she does is find fault with me.
Yeah, all the time.
So here comes the big question, of course. You know, there are a number of conditions, especially around drug addiction and ex-drug addiction, as well as there are hormonal differences that could make a difference to have a person turn on you in such a way. We understand some of this we call prolactic. We say that there's a hormone called a neurotransmitter called prolactin that kind of turns people against people. But with all that in mind, let's say that she had, God forbid, cancer, and you knew she was got a short time to live, and then she started attacking you. How would you treat her differently?
I guess I'd be more compassionate to her and
sure.
Open up more to her, like really like kind of not take it so personally.
There's the big secret. Okay, you know? Now you got exactly it, Anthony. Why do we take it personally? Why, when we do we take it personally? When you could see the other person is purely miserable. Well, okay, so maybe they're not miserable when they're petting their dog, but they're miserable with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, well, that makes me feel like when she's like that with me, it makes me feel like she's unhappy, so she'll look somewhere else to get affirmation.
And you're afraid she's going to go off with somebody else, right?
Yeah, she's had a little bit of a past, and, you know, and it's crazy because, like, it makes me feel insecure, you know?
Sure. No. I'm going to back that up for you. Let's go back to the theory about imbalance. Anthony, she can't make you feel insecure.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I understand. You're not very secure. Okay. In
yeah.
fact, if you were more secure, you probably would have chosen a different relationship.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? But okay. Yeah. Okay. So you're your own kind of not secure.
Right.
All of us will choose relationships with people who look like they could restore our balance, but will also bring up other issues of imbalance that we have inside ourselves, and this is your challenge. If you walk away from this, you learn a lot. If you stay with it, you learn a lot. But if you continue to blame her, you don't learn anything.
Right, you're right. And one more thing real quick. I feel like my childhood, my father was always cutting me down, chopping me down. I'm nothing. I'm stupid. I'm this. I'm that. I'm no good. You know, not real good relationship. And I feel like I recreated this with this woman. Like she's like my dad now. You know,
mm-hmm.
and it's like I've recreated my you know dysfunctional childhood. I think. You know,
there's a funny thing. Now there's a funny thing that happens here. Sometimes when a woman becomes aggressive, they have a higher level of maleness about them.
Yeah.
And the maleness comes out in a way that attacks you. And what it does in your own response, you have an almost feminine response to her masculine attack. In other words, it's not mano a mano because she's in a woman's body. Or for whatever reason, you have this other victim kind of response, which I hear in your voice.
Yeah.
But in effect, very often I've seen women who become aggressive towards their mates take on very masculine kind of qualities similar to your father.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like the fact that you would make that misidentification would make a lot of sense. Because she's not treating you like a nice mommy. She's treating you like a bad daddy.
You know?
But also, I've got to say, on her behalf, she's also trying to find her balance.
Exactly.
And if you back off from blaming her, you may have to spend some time alone. But it would be the only chance the two of you would have.
Right. Good.
Well, I wish you luck, so Anthony. I'm sorry you're in so much pain. To me, you're a hero, you know? To me, you're a brave man who's trying his very best. You know, and I respect you 100%.
Thank you. I respect you, too, and I love your program. Thanks so much.
Thanks, sure.
Okay.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. That's what people go through. We all do. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, Armand, how you doing?
I'm doing great. And you?
I'm good. My name is Jason. I just have something I just wanted to ask you. I'm only 22, and I've been trying for up till now. I've been trying to find out, trying to find my inner peace, and I've had a hard time finding it for some reason. I've been on those drugs that you mentioned earlier today, and I realized that those drugs did a lot more harm than good because it really didn't, you know, help me out of depression or anxiety. And I don't know. It's like I'm kind of antisocial, but you know, I come from a large family, and I have a difficult time, you know, establishing relationships with people. I just, you know, kind of keep to myself, go to school, go to work, and do a lot of just my extracurricular activities, which is in the arts. And I just I'm trying to break out of that cycle. And I've spoken to some people who give me advice on, you know, how to just live life and give me advice on how to get out of depression. But you know, it only makes me feel good for that moment.
Yeah.
Something about myself, I just fall right back into that place all over again.
And the medications haven't helped you very much, huh?
No.
Okay, so Jason, let me ask you something. What happens to you when you get angry?
I get hurt. I think of these crazy, violent things in my head, even though I never act on it. I'm not a violent person at all.
Wait. Let's talk about that. Yeah. So one of the things that I was talking about a little earlier was aggression. And one of the things that happened to young men is they turn away from their ability to aggress. So it goes from being your ability to aggress to a fantasy of aggression. But you, when you get angry, you turn it towards yourself. You bury yourself with fantasies of aggression, but you don't express your aggression, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Let me ask you one more question, Jason. Were you close to your mother?
I am, actually.
Yeah.
I'm like right under her breast.
So right under her breast is exactly where you are, which is your cave. So this is part of the design. You see, Mommy didn't want a guy who got angry. She wanted a guy who didn't get angry. And part of what you need is to be able to find your own identity underneath, stepping away from being under Mom's breast. You know, stepping away from it, not by leaving her just, but finding your own sense of strength and self. That takes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You know what? I understand what you're saying, and right now, I may get the understanding and feel good about myself. But then, what do I do when, you know, I go to bed at night and tomorrow, and then, I mean, how do I keep telling myself this over and over to not fall back into?
Yeah, I understand. Well, you know, you may need. I really don't like to push it too often, but you need the right counselor, and you need the right counselor to be a man.
A man.
A man, yes.
Oh, okay. Because I've been to therapy, different psychologists all my life, and they mostly have been women.
Right. I would imagine that because that's the way you are. You see, what's missing in you is the part that you would have gotten from a good father. You see, you would have gotten this sense of being, this sense of self, and it's missing. Does a man therapist automatically do that? No, because there are a lot of women therapists I know who have very strong masculine features. But still, there is a man-to-man thing that I think there are women-to-women things that I think are essential, and this is one is essential for you. Now, I know you've been through a lot of therapy, but I want to recommend something to you. There's a series of programs I did a long time ago on the nature of men.
Yeah, I know. I've heard it, too, and I wanted to get that information from you because I wasn't able to write it down.
I would love you to listen to those, okay? Yeah. You can get those through my office. I would never mention it if I didn't think it was essentially valuable to you. But there's a part of you that needs to understand and feel this whole identification with your own masculinity. And masculinity does not mean being mean. It just means being able to defend yourself in battle, to stand up for what you want, and be able to go after what you want, which at the moment you don't have the ability to do because the only way you find balance is underneath mama's breast, which I fully understand.
And my father's been around too, and he's not a bad guy at all. He's a very
I'm
nice
sure
guy,
he's not a bad guy.
But he's for some reason me and him for the first 12 years of my life, me and him have nothing but fighting and arguing and fighting.
Because
and
he turned and he turned you over to your mom. You see,
well, I just naturally go to her.
But yeah, of course.
All the arguing and fighting is kind of just wore me out over the years. Even now when we're getting along now, it still hurts at the fact that he's been around. I have a father in the house, and most black men don't. And I have one in the house, and we're just constantly fighting.
Yeah, because you're not fighting about the present. You're fighting about the past, Jason. Yeah. You still got a lot of stuff to cover. You know, look around. Get in touch with me. I'll find you something. But it's time to step out of this. And
what's the name of the package?
Look at thepositivemind.com, okay, and see if you can find stuff on the website.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, Jason, lots of love to you.
Thank you.
I love the way he said it. I'm right there under mama's breast. 212-209-2900. Maybe he said breath and I heard it the other way. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. It's Mary from Seacliff. How are you?
Hello, Mary from Seacliff. How is Seacliff nowadays?
It's lovely.
Lovely.
Lovely town.
You're not too cold out there, huh?
No, actually, today is gorgeous.
Good.
I complain. Armand, I have been in therapy for, on and off for over 30 years. Mm-hmm. I hate to admit it. It's embarrassing, but it's true. And I keep coming back to the same place, it seems. I'll make progress. I go forward. Something happens in my life. It sets me back. So recently, I'm unemployed now. A relationship ended a few years ago that left me devastated. I don't know what path to take. So I'm back in therapy, but I still am finding it so difficult to make headway. I'm also, I don't know if you've ever heard of HSP, Highly Sensitive People. There's a book by Elaine Aronson.
Yes, I do. I know.
Okay. I am the class, I have those symptoms, so I consider myself one of those people that are sensitive to noise, sensitive to a lot of stimulus, which definitely affects me. I started having anxiety when I was in my teens, panic attacks. Just recently in the last few years, the depression has set in, and I'm in my 50s now. So my question to you is really the therapy, I have a wonderful therapist. She's great. I love her. She's very knowledgeable, but it's still not helping.
Yeah, I know. After 31 years, you would imagine that it would. I mean, probably it did make an effect, and probably your ability even to call now with the kind of identity that you have, with the kind of weight that you're carrying on your shoulder, is an indication of some of the good stuff that you've gotten from it.
Yes.
But no, it's not, it's not the same idea. Talking to someone isn't the same idea. You need something different. It seems apparent that you need something a little different. Now, that could mean either you've got to do a complete maybe change or maybe examine your hormones and neurotransmitters to see if something is collaborating with your nervousness and your inability to function. Because what you're basically saying is, I can't find my balance. And this goes back to the very basis of what Gestalt therapy is. It's everybody's attempt to find their balance.
Yes.
And you're trying to find your balance, and you don't know of another way. You've got, if I were to tell you that, discover Jesus and you'll find your way. I mean, it's just as valid as discover therapy or discover drugs or discover. However, there is stuff inside the body that does rule us. And there is stuff that I'm always interested in, because sometimes, you know, we therapists, we treat people and we don't know that the person has this dominating, you know, low level of estrogen or something like that going on that we just don't know about. So that's the first one. The first one is to do a real physical check to make sure that you're absolutely okay there.
Okay.
The second one is, if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always got. So whatever kind of therapy you're doing, maybe that's not the one. Now, on my website, I talk about a thing called intense feeling psychotherapy. I don't recommend it, but it's a good description about how that kind of alternative process may work. And there are a bunch of alternative processes that may keep you out of the dumps. The main thing we got to do is keep you in touch with your aggression, keep you in touch with your power. And, you know, just analysis and niceness doesn't always do it.
Yeah, well, this is true.
You know?
Yeah.
So who are you mad at, just curiously?
Oh, geez. My mother? My father?
Yeah. Keep going.
A friend, a business partner that let me
That's
down.
Right. That's right.
My ex-husband, the
sure.
ex-boyfriend. I could go on.
Oh, keep going. Keep going.
Teachers, the priest at my church.
Sure.
That I went to a long time ago. I don't go anymore.
So you see, this is what I'm trying to...
My dog for dying.
And your dog for dying, of course. And this is the point I'm trying to make to you, Yisel. The point is that what we carry inside of us is all of this stuff. And when you have the sensitivity that you have, your attempt to find balance is to blame the other people. You know?
Yeah, but I try not to do that. I'm not
yeah,
very aware
I can see
that.
You're on the way of giving it all up.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting there, sweetie.
Okay. All righty.
Listen, thank you so much for calling in, Mary. Oh, nice to hear your voice again.
Thank you. Take care.
Speak
Bye-bye.
To you again. Bye-bye. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. It is not easy. It is not easy. But like they said, we're always trying to find our balance. And anything we do to bring ourselves back in balance is what we're really searching for. So I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 o'clock with more of this stuff. Thank you so much, my friends. If you want to learn more about this, go to thepositivemind.com.
Thanks very much, Armand. Positive Mind.
get together like this every weekend. That fellow playing the carpet there, you know, the shh sound, he's running for mayor. And the...